So it was a bit like, maybe there's too much value in me and not what the company's actually doing, and I'm sort of this unique entity. But eventually, with some of the other offers we received, we started to see some buyers really seeing the value in the business too.
Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Dowse. Quiet Light Brokerage is the leader in helping entrepreneurs build, buy, and sell their online businesses. Since 2007, we have helped thousands buy and sell online businesses. And now, we're putting our extensive knowledge in your earbuds with our trademark relentless honesty and a few laughs along the way.
I am not a destroyer of companies. I am a liberator of them.
And now, here's Joe and Mark.
Mark, one of the great things about Quiet Light and the team that we have is we're always communicating in the background, helping each other out, asking questions, sharing information. And more recently, we're seeing a lot of communication about the sale of UK-based or European-based Amazon seller accounts and the transfer of it. And I understand that you just took one on. I did one a few years ago. Actually, there's usually a small component of most transactions that I do, if it's FBA, that there's a European one, but 100% German seller account last year. We're always doing them, and they're always different. Our buyers get a little bit concerned about buying one, and our sellers get a little bit concerned about the transferability of one. But you just took on a very complicated one. You managed to do the transfer. It ended up being a stock sale. And there were some definitive advantages to both the buyer and the seller in making this happen. Can you tell us a little bit about what this podcast is about and how you talked about the owner of the business there?
Yeah. So the owner of the business is Joseph Harwood. He agreed to come on very graciously. I'm super happy he came on because in 12 years of selling online businesses, this was easily the most complex transaction I've done. There was a moment where we had a sell side conference call only. So only the advisors on the sell side. And I was the last person to join. And the prompt at the beginning of the call said, "You are the 12th caller on this call." And I'm thinking, 12 people on this call, on the sell side only, to advise this transaction. Now, you might be hearing this and thinking, and that's why I don't do a UK deal, right? Because it's complex. But here's the thing. Throughout this process, not only did we take what was a fairly complex business in terms of its operations, we took a UK company, which has some tax disadvantages being sold in the US, and we managed to make a structure that worked out well for the buyer and worked out well for the seller. In fact, there are structures available which can be tax advantageous for both to a significant degree. And our buyer in this case, God bless him, great person, great buyer, had the perfect mindset for this, which was to not try and digest this large transaction all at once. And everybody on the team did the same thing, by the way, just to address each problem step by step. And the result of this is that he got a great deal and a great company that is growing like absolute bonkers that not a lot of people were looking at. And for him to look here and not rule this out based off the UK domicile only is a testament to him. And I think will pay off pretty handsomely for him. On the UK side, I know we talked to a lot of UK sellers who think that they can't sell their business. And listen, it's more difficult. We're not going to cast aspersions here and say that it's somehow easy to do. A lot of people do avoid UK-based businesses, but it is possible. It is possible. It needs to be structured right. We need to attack it correctly. And for those of you out there looking to buy, if you can figure out this UK angle, and it is something that can be figured out, we do have a template for it, it's a really good opportunity because there's some great businesses out there that aren't going to market right now for the very reason that those sellers don't think they can.
I would say it's almost the unavoidable future, right? Long time ago, we talked about, can you even sell an Amazon-based business? Well, here we are, millions and millions and millions of them sold. Now, it's those businesses all have a lot of them have a UK component to them, and some are standalone UK businesses or really European businesses. Could be any country over there. So I think it's the future. I think it's important for both buyers and sellers to understand it. I'm real excited to listen to this one myself and hear your most complicated transaction in 12 years come to a final close and successful transaction for both the buyer and seller.
All right, Joseph, thank you so much for agreeing to come on the podcast. For those of you who didn't pick this up in the intro, and I'm sure Joe and I talked about this, but Joseph, you and I recently worked together along with Scott Dietz from Northbound to help sell your business. And I'm really happy to have you on because we love bringing on previous clients.
Yeah, glad to be here, Mark. Hopefully I can sort of shine some light on how it's possible to sell UK limited companies to US buyers.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that I definitely want to talk about on this and just have a conversation with you with. I know within Quiet Light Brokerage, we have this conversation quite a bit. And then I would imagine among UK sellers, it's probably met with some skepticism, the idea that you could even sell a UK business, e-commerce business, primarily because of the tax situation. Could you just go over that for somebody who might not be familiar with what does a tax situation look like for a UK seller who's considering selling their business?
Yeah. So basically the big fear is doing an asset deal and then having to take your funds as income, which is then transferred into your personal assets, which is taxed heavily if you get over around about 100K threshold. And that's at about 45%. So doing an asset deal is technically really, really bad for a UK seller. So generally, most sellers want to do a sale of shares deal. And then you get a 10% tax called entrepreneur's relief, which is taxed personally up to you have an allowance of 10 million in that, and that's at 10% tax. So it's a pretty significant difference tax wise, depending on what kind of deal you can get.
Yeah, and I think buyers or sellers tend to be skeptical that they can do this, and this isn't just with the UK. I know Canada has something very similar. Australia has a similar structure as well, where in a share sale, you get a pretty awesome tax rate. And then if you're doing an asset sale, you're going to get absolutely killed with the tax rate. But buyers don't generally want to do a stock sale. And brokers like myself, you know, I know when you and Scott first approached me, I mean, it was one of the first things I told you. I'm like, well, I don't know about a stock deal. You know, I can't offer something as a stock deal. That's hurdle number one, right? And hurdle number two, a buyer is looking at it. I don't know. What would you guess would be the number one objection from buyers? I would say probably the liability carrying forward.
I think structuring wise, it's complex because you're buying an entity in a different country. So I think that in itself can scare off a few people. It's, you know, there's a bit more of a learning curve.
How many, let's go over the advisors we had on your team. So just on the sell side, we had Scott Dietz, myself.
Yeah, we'd retained Redpath, it's US tax advisors, who had retained a UK counsel.
Oh, so they had a UK counsel as well.
They had the UK council sort of retained within them. So that was kind of tax advice, UK, US. And then we had a UK contract advisor and then our US contract advisor. So technically four different retentions of legal advice, which, yeah, ended up in quite a hefty bill. I think it was a good learning process for everyone involved.
Well, the thing is, you can absorb that hefty bill. We're not going to discuss how much you sold your business for. I mean, it was in the seven-figure-ish range. It was a good size. When you're talking about the difference between a 45% tax and a 10% tax, paying for advisors, I mean, it's worth it. But it did get complex in that there was just a lot of voices that were being heard with every single document that got shared. And that was just on the sell side. We had Rochelle Locke, who's been on our podcast, advising the buy side. And they had their own people as well that were advising on the tax structure and everything else. There was a lot of advisors there. So it was a bit more complex, but I think part of that was because we hadn't done this before.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say it was a big learning curve for everyone involved. We were lucky to have a patient buyer who was determined to see the deal through to the end. And I think we, from that experience, have learned a lot about selling a UK company to a US entity. Yeah, it's a complicated process, but looking back at it now, the tax piece of the puzzle is, I mean, okay, every situation in business is unique, but there would be no way we would need to have as many detailed conversations because we're kind of aware of what issues can crop up tax-wise. The permanent establishment thing and where, you know, the business is run from and those kind of things are more solvable. Now we're sort of prepared. And then contract-wise, like I don't actually think we needed to retain UK counsel until the buy side presented documentation for it. And then we would have had UK counsel review that, the UK law side documents. But I think Sean from e-commerce law group would have been fine for just reviewing the actual SPA agreement. But yeah, like it could have been simplified down, but it was still in itself like a valuable process to learn. And there was so many great things about the tax side that were sort of gleaned from that process. I think it was worth it.
Yeah, I want to get into that in a little bit because one of the eye-opening things with your transaction was the number of tax advantages that you personally had as a seller, and also the tax advantages that we were able to potentially introduce into the buy side of the equation. And for those that are listening that are looking for acquisitions, there's actually an opportunity here, which we basically uncovered, to look at UK-based businesses and save some significant money in a number of ways. But before we get into that, I want to back up a little bit and just talk about what it was like when you first came on with Quiet Light Brokerage. Because I remember when Scott, who you hired a while ago to help advise, and again, Scott's a great guy, super good at advising. He caught me at a conference in Austin and said, "Hey, Mark, I got this great business for you." And then he went into a little bit of what it was. And I'm like, "I don't know, Scott. You know, I don't know about the future." And then he said, "Well, we really believe this is going to be good. And there's all sorts of reasons that we know this business is going to grow by this much. And by the way, it's a UK company." And I'm just thinking, Scott, come on.
Every step of the conversation, it gets a little bit harder, doesn't it?
Right. And so the first time that I talked to you, Scott and I were also at a conference, and so I got up early. I think I was in Las Vegas. My whole mindset was, okay, I've got to get this guy's expectations set early on. That this is, I will take this on, but this is going to be really, really difficult to do. And I'm glad though that you saw through all that, because it did turn out to be a really eye-opening sort of exercise. But what was that initial ongoing, the initial upfront process like? I know you've listed a business before for sale. What was it like going through that process with Quiet Light?
It was great. The first brokerage that I've worked with that has gone to so much detail to answer so many potential objections from a buyer. I mean, I'm surprised we got any no's after that. The depth on our information pack and the seller interview. I mean, the length you guys went to understand potential objections and understand the business as well, the risks involved, and kind of highlighting it, picking up on the upsides, and really like understanding what I was doing with my company and the niche I'm in. I think that was a huge part to getting a buyer to the table who was ready to take on the risk. As we're aware, it's a Q4 niche. It's a very risky prospect. And I think the buyer saw the risk and the upside, you know, and was able to make an educated decision because of the information that had been put together. I'm not going to lie, it got to the point where it was slightly frustrating. We were having our firstborn son at the time. We intended to be listed and sold before that happened. We ended up a bit further behind than we actually wanted to be. But, you know, like in the end, it was right because we got a deal done. So that's all that really matters.
Yeah. And the good news is we beat your son crawling, right? He's not crawling yet.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So we got the business sold before
you. We got there.
That upfront process was difficult, but the lesson that I took away from that portion, like, your business was unique in a lot of ways. Like you said, it was fourth quarter sort of product. And look, a lot of Amazon products, a lot of Amazon businesses are fourth quarter heavy, but yours really relied on that fourth quarter more so. And just to put this in context for people listening, the growth trajectory that we were seeing on your business was really, really significant. You know, and some of the things we were anticipating were pretty aggressive. And so, and that all came in this sort of shortened period. And so there was this element of perceived risk. So the lesson I took away from this that was so good, and again, Scott did a great job with this, was figuring out a structure that got you, Joseph, you know, a good amount of money at close, where it wasn't going to be a complete miss if things, you know, fell apart, but also allowed you to ride some risk with a buyer and let them really cash in on the upside of that without risking all the money on it. And so deal structuring to answer objections, I think, is really, if I could summarize it.
Yeah, no, I really totally agree. And I think a lot of brokerage firms just have this kind of cookie cutter response to how they want to list a deal. It's 3x, it's 4x because of blah, blah, and blah. We listed with an earnout. And I think that one pulled up our multiple, but two, I think it really reassured the buyer that we believed our projections and they weren't just pulled out of thin air and to kind of like, you know, like we're really willing to go on that journey with you. And I think, yeah, I think that really helped.
Yeah, I think so too. And a lot of people in your shoes don't want to do an earnout because, especially when it's first proposed, you think, well, I don't know who's going to buy the company. Like, how can I trust them? First of all, A, complete credit to you to understanding the upside for you as well with an earnout where you can tap into some of the future growth of the business. But then B, you were involved in this process all the way through and you saw the importance of knowing who your buyer was and being able to trust that buyer to be able to grow the business and be competent. We got a fantastic buyer. He was great through the whole process and I think he's going to kill it with the business.
I don't think it would have been as easy to move forward if I wasn't as confident with the buyer. You know, if it was a private equity group that, you know, would have put the company in hands of someone who might not know how to manage an Amazon business effectively, or specifically this kind of Amazon business, I think there's, because of the sort of seasonality and SKU density, like I think it takes a kind of special approach to running that business. And I think our buyer has that. So yeah, I mean, it's definitely important.
Yeah. And on the flip side, and I don't want to speak for the buyer. I'm hoping to get him on the podcast. He's agreed, but he's obviously busy with, you know, he's
pretty busy
with a new business. So I totally get that. But from his perspective, where he's really, really smart is not only did he buy a business with some really strong forecasted growth, he bought a business where a lot of other buyers weren't even looking because they just discounted it saying, UK, I'm not interested, right? And so it gave him some advantage as far as that. And look, let's be honest, it took a little bit more effort for us to find a buyer. We had a number of conference calls and nothing materialized. At the end of the day, we had a couple of good qualified buyers that were kind of competing, but it took a bit for us to get there. I mean, was there a point, I'll answer this after you do, but was there a point along the way where you thought this isn't happening?
No, to be honest, I think at the start, I felt like it wasn't happening the right way because a lot of the buyers that we were getting on calls were trying to keep me pretty significantly involved in the company and structuring their offers or their LOIs around me either having salary or retained in a large amount of equity, less upfront cash. So it was a bit like, maybe there's too much value in me and not what the company's actually doing. And I'm sort of this unique entity. But eventually with some of the other offers we received, we started to see some buyers really seeing the value in the business too. Yeah, I mean, overall, I don't know. I don't think at any point during the process, I was particularly worried that it wasn't going to happen. I think there's always a buyer out there for what you're selling. If you know what I mean, like it's just what I was selling was a very specific thing that required someone who was willing to take a pretty significant amount of risk. And yeah, we found that person.
Yeah. And again, risk, the offset to that risk for him is the upside on this, right? The upside is getting significant. And look, there is value in you, but I think from a buyer standpoint, when I look at how that dynamic worked out, I mean, you were pretty vocal up front saying, I don't want to be working in this business moving forward long term, just because you have other interests, right? You have a newborn son. You want to spend time with that son, and that's totally reasonable. All the same, you are going to be doing some work with the business here moving forward, mainly because you and this buyer get along wonderfully. And so he's accomplishing what other people were trying to wrap up early on by really just having a good relationship with you, which again, is just as we preach about this all the time, right? If you want to be a good buyer and be successful, be likable.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I was a bit concerned because the buyer and I were sharing a lot of information about the business before close. And in the end, I just discounted that nagging thought in the back of my head to, you know, should I trust this person? Are we actually going to close? Are they just trying to, you know, gather information and then pull out or whatever and try and compete? And yeah, I just put my trust in the buyer. And I think that really, really paid off.
It's easier to trust a buyer when you see that they're spending a lot of money as well on their side with advisors, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That would have been an expensive fact-finding mission for him. Let's talk a little bit about some of the tax advantages. I mean, we've already talked about just the advantage of the 45% to 10% on your side. But something you brought up, you came out, by the way, for people, we didn't say this before, but you came out and actually visited me here in the Twin Cities, as well as Scott, who lives in the Twin Cities. We had dinner. It was great. It was along with Eric as well from Redpath. First time a client has come out and visited. It was fantastic. A lot of fun. But one thing you brought up in that conversation was the tax savings that you were able to generate as well on the money within the cash within the business, which is one of these kind of hidden benefits that maybe we weren't anticipating early on.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of knew it existed as an option, but because moving into the process, I wasn't 100% sure if we would actually get a sale of stocks deal. You know, I knew that was a big driver, so that's something we were pushing for. But so basically, to summarize, the working capital and inventory within the company can also be released tax efficiently during the earnout because it's counted as working capital. So basically, you sell the cash of the company and the inventory to the buyer, and they then cycle that back to you. I mean, you can do it as quickly as 10 days. We're allowed longer, so we've got time to kind of work out the accounting side. But they effectively buy the cash, and you're giving it back at the entrepreneur's rate, so the 10%. So instead of, you know, having to slowly either take that money as salary or income and dividend, you can pull that out of the business into personal through entrepreneur's relief at 10%, which is a nice benefit and something that for anyone sell side, you should really be considering. The year before you sell your business, you want to be building your cash reserves because you can pull that money out at an extremely tax efficient rate.
And in your case, it was, I won't put a number to it, but it was a significant savings, probably taking a large chunk, if not the entire chunk off of some of your advisors that you were paying to help us.
Yeah, and more, structure. For sure. That alone. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, we take a look at that. Again, the path that you sort of blazed here for a lot of other UK sellers with all these advisors, we have a pretty nice path down. I want to just touch briefly on some of the tax savings that we saw on the buy side. Are you familiar with much of that or should we pass over that?
I mean, I think it's important. I don't totally understand the details. Very, very top level view. I know there's structuring that you can do with different entities in a holding company that achieves a effective tax rate of 21%. Then the sort of tweak of that is if you then pull all the company activities into the US, i.e. you don't have a person in the UK, a UK office, or whatever country you end up, you know, running the business in, you don't have what's called permanent establishment in that country. So then the effective tax rate ends up being at 26%. So again, it's still not bad. Like the flow-through tax rate of an LLC is 37, right? So whatever happens, it's an effective way to use the dual tax treaty between the UK and the US, and it's the same with some other countries like Canada and Australia, like we said before. But yeah, like when it comes to the actual structuring, that's more for a tax advisor to kind of discuss. But yeah, it's one of those things. Once you get past the liability, which can be solved contractually, like it presents a huge opportunity for both buyer and seller, which is, I think, an important thing to have those conversations about, because it's not just the seller that benefits from effective tax rates.
That's right. And so just to kind of recap here, what we're talking about here is going from an effective 37% here in the US. When we think about buying an Amazon business, we typically look at just a straight up asset sale. You set up a new LLC, and then you're going to have your earnings on that business taxed at that 37%. Under this structure, it would require a different sort of setup with companies. And I won't get into the details on that, mainly because I don't want to get something wrong here on this episode. I hope to have Eric from Redpath on, who can discuss this in more detail. But effectively going from that 37%, like you said, down to an effective rate of, what was it, 25%?
21 or 26, depending on which country the operations are run out of.
Right. And so that can be a significant savings if you are seeing earnings well into the six figures. And in addition to that, having that structure set up. So if you were just to say, as a buying group, I want to buy in the UK, because let's face it, there's a lot of UK companies that are really, really powerful and doing some amazing things. You now have a vehicle within UK to be able to acquire some of these properties and save on the tax rate as well. It's a double bonus there, in my opinion, from a buy side. It requires a little bit of setup, but the benefits are definitely there long term.
I think as well, one of the cool things that we sort of talked about at the dinner we had was not many other buyers are looking at these companies. And I think that gives the buy side another competitive advantage. Because, you know, like, some of the other larger brokerage firms are not, they're not looking at UK companies as slavery. I remember having some initial conversations with another broker, and the second we mentioned it was a UK company, they basically took 0.5 and multiple off the company, because they were like, yeah, we don't do that. We don't do stock. We don't do, you know. And I think that approach to UK companies, like, means that they're, you know, there's more of them available.
Yeah, with a US-based company, you have this tendency where if you don't move quickly as a buyer, and by quickly I mean days, yeah, you're going to lose it. And with a UK company, often, and it didn't happen in your case, actually, when we actually got down to that LOI stage, things did move rather rapidly. But there was luxury for some of the earlier buyers to basically take their time, because they didn't have, and normally we have, you know, a dozen or more people looking at a property. In this case, we had less than that looking at this closely, enough for some competitive pressure. But I think that was crazy. And I think the pace was a bit more comfortable. What would you say, let's flip around a little bit here and kind of round out with this. There's a lot of UK sellers out there that may be looking at this and saying, you know, I've never really considered selling my company. Some of the things that you would recommend, you've already mentioned building up some savings in your account before going to market, so that you can pull that out as a favorable tax rate. But what else would you mention to UK-based sellers that maybe haven't considered this before?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's I'm not sure what advice I have specifically for UK sellers. I have some good general sale advice, like, you know, have your numbers in order, know your inventory values, have inventory management software if possible, so you can pull inventory numbers at any given time, know your way around your balance sheets, like having numbers over to a buyer as quickly as possible helps them be informed and helps you get the deal closed. I think that's fundamental. You don't want to be waiting for your accountant to get this information. I mean, for UK buyers, I don't think I have any really specific advice in any more detail, but like, the buyers are out there. There are interested parties willing to look at structuring options and get deals done. I think it's an exciting time for UK companies because there are options out there to get closes that are tax favorable for a UK company.
Yeah, I would agree 100%. Again, this has been an eye-opening experience for me as far as just what we can do when we take a look at a deal, structure it smartly from the beginning. I think the other lesson that to pull away from this was just the benefit in bringing on good advisors. I know both on the buy side and sell side, I see people hesitate sometimes. You know, maybe their books are a mess, and so we recommend that they hire a bookkeeper, and we have a number that we recommend that just do good work. And sometimes people, they balk at that. And, you know, I don't want to spend the $3,000 or $4,000, but the benefit you get out of hiring a good advisor, I mean, it should pay for itself. Well, this is great, Joseph. I know that there are going to be people out there who have questions about this. Are you open to having some of them contact you by email with questions?
Yeah, for sure. I'm happy. Anyone that wants to talk to me, either buy or sell side. you know, I'm probably not going to give you any detailed information in structures that I don't truly understand. But happy to sort of field any questions that this might bring up.
Okay, well, we will place some contact information for you in the show notes to this episode. So I'll get that from you. Really appreciate you coming on here and taking the time to talk about the deal. I know it's not always comfortable talking about the deal that you just closed, because most of us, let's face it, we're introverts.
Yeah, I should be on holiday now, really, anyway.
You should be. Instead, you're still doing all this stuff. So, hey, thank you for coming on. I appreciate you sharing your story with us. Thanks for trusting us to do the deal. And I think most importantly, as much stress as it was also just a ton of fun.
Yeah, I mean, I was generally enthused by the process. I really enjoyed negotiating and closing and selling a company. It's the first one I've ever done. So, pretty excited.
I can't wait till the next one.
Yeah, me too.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Joseph.
All right, thanks, Mark.
Today's podcast was produced by Podcast Motor and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast, or if you want to guess the quote from the beginning of the show for a chance at getting a shout out on the pod, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and subscribe to our YouTube channel and this show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.